Welcome to another installment of Beckman Meyer
Overtime. Wait, didn't it start with Meyer?
Welcome to another installment of
Beckman
Meyer
Overtime.
Today we want to talk about the Lambda
Company. What do we want to talk about, Brian?
Today we want to talk about
Lambda calculus,
yes.
Oh, that's why we have Alonzo here.
Yes. The great American mathematician and logician who made major contributions to mathematical logic and the foundations of theoretical computer science. Church Turing, Church Rosser. What's Church Turing?
So that's kind of, you know, what is computable?
Ah, okay.
And so this is also really nice that you mentioned Church, because this is the kind of centennial of Turing, right?
Yes.
Turing Church. So,
right.
like for example, June 15th, there's like a big event over in San Francisco with all the Turing Awards.
Oh, very good. Yes.
Roland Backhaus over in Nottingham has a kind of programming competition with Turing machines.
Ooh,
yes. And then all over the world,
that's Core Wars again. Yes. Remember Core Wars?
Yes. We're that old. Yep. So there's a lot of Turing activities this year, actually.
Good. Yeah. Okay. So Church Turing is about what is computable.
Yes.
Now I want to contrast the Lambda calculus before we.
Okay, but let's first kind of write like what is the Lambda calculus, because we're programmers, so we like syntax, right?
Okay.
Oh, I thought you would say you want semantics. Oh, come on.
Now we'll do the Lambda calculus.
Okay, let's do the Lambda calculus.
Nobody's afraid of the Lambda calculus because of Link. Because of Link, we have Lambda expressions everywhere, so now everybody's comfortable with this thing.
Exactly. Even VB programmers.
Now, I'm going to write it in an abstract syntax, and then we'll go and make some examples. An expression is either...
Okay. This
is Lambda calculus is beautiful because it's one of the smallest programming languages in the world, but it's big enough to do everything that Church Turing says you can do.
Everything, yes. Although there's also kind of interesting other theories that say that, like, you know, Church Turing, that there's more. Because these assume a closed world and they don't have interaction. So,
for example,
actors and so on, people there. So that's a whole kind of thing. And Jury, our friend Jury, also... talks about that, so maybe we should.
And then there are these strange critters out there, like the Ackermann's function, which is somehow you can compute values of it, but somehow it's not computable in some kind of sense.
Yeah. So, but we should have Jury here.
Okay. Yes.
Our friend Jury.
All right. But this part,
the
language is so small you can write the whole thing in three lines.
Yes.
You may either mention a variable, and we'll use the meta variable x to mean a variable.
Good.
Or you may write a function of one variable that returns another expression.
Okay.
Or you can apply an expression to another expression. And here function application looks just like putting two things together. So that's it. That's the whole programming language.
Wasn't there something with Church and Curry with types and untyped stuff and so on? Is this now a dynamically typed language or what? Because I mean, can I apply, like, you know, a variable to a function?
This is just syntax.
Oh, this is syntax.
This is just syntax.
Okay.
So anything that obeys this, if you put this into Yak, you can make a little compiler for the Lambda calculus. But what kind of code would you generate? So you'd have to have another rule that says what these things mean.
Okay.
So, for example, I'm going to pick this guy out.
Okay.
And let me decorate these with names. This particular rule is called mention, or just men.
Okay.
This one is called abstraction.
Okay.
Or just abs, and this one is called app. For apply.
Okay, I thought it was like an app in the app store or something.
Yeah, like an app store. Yeah.
Okay, but.
But see, he thought of everything.
Okay. Yes. He already got.
Too bad he's passed away. Otherwise, he could be collecting royalties on the name app. So a rule for app is if I have some Lambda of x that returns an e, this thing, by this rule, is itself an e. So now I'm going to apply it to a y, which is itself an e.
Okay.
This particular e is an app.
Yep.
This particular e is a mention. So this expression is syntactically legal, but what I'm going to generate code to replace or rewrite this expression, this compound expression, with, now I have to give, no I don't. I'm going to, inside E, I replace Y for every occurrence of X. And there's another little side condition.
I was silent. Did you see? I was silenced. My yes. speaker went out.
Yes. Oh. Very good.
Okay. So now, why do you use this kind of weird notation here? I usually write because we all know assignments.
You're the guy who makes. I like to write things in the most complicated way possible,
yes.
and you like to write things in the simplest way possible.
Look. And this is like shows my age, you know, when assignment was still written as it should be.
Okay.
Now everybody understands
it. Very good.
Because you kind of have it in like postfix, replace.
Yeah.
X becomes Y.
Very good.
Okay.
Now there's one little side rule.
Okay.
And that's not easy to write down this side rule. But the side rule is if it so happens that inside E there is some abstraction or some other uses of the variable Y, we can't do this.
Ah.
We have to be careful.
Yes, and that is, by the way, and you can search for that. This is something that even the big logicians always got wrong, right?
Yes.
This substitution rule, it looks deceptively simple.
Right.
But it's super hard to implement.
In fact, I will show you one that goes terribly, terribly wrong. Suppose E,
And by the way, this is the same thing while you're thinking, and
yeah.
I'm kind of interrupting you again.
Yeah.
Yes. So. This is what a lot of kind of languages do wrong too. When people implement lambda expressions in a programming language, they often get binding wrong. So
yes.
they get dynamic scoping instead of static scoping.
That's right.
That's what we're talking about.
Right.
Here. So everybody gets that wrong. So if you have ever implemented a language and you accidentally got the scoping wrong, you're in good company.
You're in good company, right. This is a little bit like binary search. The first binary search algorithm was published in 1947. The first correct binary search algorithm was published in 1961.
Okay.
And that's just binary search, which every college kid is supposed to be able to do, right? So now let's say that my E were this
yep.
guy. So my lambda x dot E looks correct.
Yep.
And I'm now going to apply this to Y.
Yep.
I'm going to now just use my eraser because assignment means erasing the old thing and putting
yes.
in the new one. And look, I've made a horrible mistake. I'm going to get rid of this.
And off that
and
one there.
Just
oh, you still have to get rid of that one, right?
Yeah, I got to get
yes.
rid of that.
Oh, yes. And now suddenly that Y got bound in there.
That's right. It wasn't the Y that I sent in from the outside. It's now the Y that was captured on the inside, captured by the abstraction rule.
Exactly.
So this is a disaster.
That's a disaster. So that's one.
But there's all kinds of kludges for fixing this.
Yes.
Many, many things. So let me write up a couple of names.
Yep.
In the theoretical, well, in the practical world, what people do is when you have a lambda x dot, let me be completely concrete, a lambda x that's an x plus y, inside the compiler, they just replace x with $3.79 or something like that. Some
yep.
fresh variable that you pull out of your hat. It could be a GUID, it could be anything, and now it won't collide. But it can't collide because it's fresh.
But another thing also, like you have a very kind of, you implemented this in a very syntactic way.
Yeah, I did.
As a compiler guy, I would never do this in a syntactic way.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about like, you know, about this rewrite process
yes,
more.
Yes, yes.
But if you look at like, you know, what like C sharp or Java or whatever, you never kind of really do the substitution. You have an environment where you kind of, you know, you in the environment, you look up this X. So
yeah.
you look in the stack, so there's never, in some sense, you can say that
so
this
you
is...
So like you can't collide because...
Exactly. You replace
the
X variable, by an offset. Yeah.
The variable isn't X. It's some pointer to a location in your environment.
Yes.
Which might as well be an address like this.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, the reason I'm doing this syntactically is because I want to segue...
Into?
From lambda calculus
into
to general term rewriting.
Right.
So general term rewriting really is a syntactic process.
Yeah.
Lambda calculus is an instance of term rewriting.
Yep.
It is a term rewriting system, and we know because of Church-Turing thesis that it is big enough to do all of computation.
Yep.
And since we can write general term rewriters in languages that support only the lambda calculus, general term rewriting in some sense isn't any bigger than lambda calculus.
Yes.
But from the expressibility point of view, it gives you more hammers.
Yep. So you can, you know, get
more hammers, more
thumbs.
You can get bluer thumbs, right? It gives you more tools to play around with. So general term rewriting is You write your program as a collection of rules, and you keep applying the a rule is of the form. Let's wake this up again. A rule is of the form pattern and replacement.
Yep.
Now, in the little rule that I wrote for the lambda calculus, the pattern is lambda x of e applied to some, let me call it f, rewrites to e with x, x gets f.
Look at that. Smart student, fast learner. Yeah.
So this is a particular rewrite rule.
Yep.
So, but this one, if you program in the lambda calculus, then Church gives you this rule, and that's the one you get to use. If you program in a general term rewriting system, you get to write your own rules.
Ah,
so now
it's anarchist.
What could you use this for? Well, we have a practical application. Yes. Let's look at this thing.
Yes.
Since 1994, every food item in the U.S. has been sold with these standard nutrition fact labels.
Yep.
Now, these things are very confusing. There's a nutrition, serving size is one pop, which is 51 grams. Serving per container is 8. Okay, I'll buy that. Amount per serving, 15 calories. Why should I believe that? It's got 4 grams of carbohydrates, which is 1% of my, okay, look, this is a confusing thing.
Yes, and also, like yesterday, I had an ice cream, and it was like one cup. And then it said, like, you know, one cup was 1.25 servings.
Yeah.
Which is like even more confusing because now you cannot even kind of count the calories.
Yeah.
So
what we're going to do is we're going to use a general term rewriting system.
To count calories.
We're going to count calories. We're going to analyze the bejeebers out of one of these
things.
Yes,
and I think there's mistakes in here because,
we're
look at this.
You
might have noticed that I gained some weight, Brian.
Yeah?
Yes, I think.
These things, let's find out.
Let's find out.
General term rewriting system of mine.
It's not because I don't exercise. It must be something
else. It's something else. It's somebody else's fault.
Yes. always.
Wait a minute, Eric. If you just do some more of this. Actually, we should have our own exercise show.
Yes.
Aerobics. Beckman and Meyer aerobics.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And then we can do exercise. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes.
So I'm going to ignore this presentation, it's to another audience, but the point is the same thing.
But, Brian, how can they ignore the presentation if it's on the screen? Well,
I am going to make the point.
It's all right, fine, we'll walk through
the whole thing.
Yes.
The whole message here that I want to give with term rewriting, this is Mathematica, by the way, as you know, it's one of
which
my favorite gadgets.
And it's like a term rewriting system.
It is a general term rewriting system. You get to write your own replacement rules.
Yes.
And
by the way, a lot of math that you do in high school is like term rewriting, right? If you do long division or, you know, algebra, that's all about kind of, you know, rewriting.
It's all rewriting.
Right. Yep.
And in fact, that's why general term rewriting is favored for computer algebra systems, because you just write down the rules of algebra as replacement rules. Let's give an example of a replacement rule. A really good one is the distributive law. Everybody remembers this. If you have x times y plus z, you're always free to rewrite this as xy plus xz.
So now, Brian, you're such a physicist, because how do you know that this is not xy as an identifier?
Let's put in our little stars there. And it actually makes physics easier, too, because you run out of letters really fast.
Yes. And then you put
then you start putting Greek, and then you start putting Russian and Hebrew and Chinese, and it's a mess.
Yeah.
So you don't always want to do this, but this rule is freely available for you, and it's great. Now, here's another big difference between, this goes to this point here. TR enables techniques impossible via ordinary programming in JavaScript or C#, and easy with symbolic expressions. What do I mean by this?
Yeah, because impossible, we just talked about Church-Turing thesis. It's not impossible.
Not impossible.
But hard. But
I did qualify this by saying ordinary programming. Of course you can do it in JavaScript or C#, because you can implement a generic term rewriter in JavaScript or C#. But if you're going to do that, you might as well use a generic term rewriter.
Okay, so you're saying inside every JavaScript program is a little Mathematica.
Waiting to be released as a mere matter of programming.
Okay.
But here's the point. Yep. In ordinary use of JavaScript or C#, an unbound variable is a catastrophic error. The compiler has no idea what to do with
it. And depending if you're statically typed or dynamically typed, it will blow up
one way or the other, or a runtime. But the point is, the compiler or the interpreter does not know what to do with it.
Yes. Now, maybe we should explain what is an unbound variable.
Yes.
Because that's an unbound variable.
I'll let you do that.
Okay. So an unbound variable is like, in some sense, what we had in the previous example, in the very first example. If I write, you know, var, you know, like void main, this is my program, and now I write var x equals y, and now this is a bound variable. I've declared x here.
You're binding it because
I'm binding it.
Equal sign
but,
says.
But y, where's y defined? So now I can search for y, but I don't find it. So it's like a free variable. It's an unbound variable. Hmm.
Does this have something to do with closures?
It has to do a little bit of closure.
Yes.
Let's do a closure.
Let's do a closure.
Now let's do a closure. Let's say 4, 7, 11. That's my favorite.
Favorite
identifier.
Number. Yeah.
Okay, my favorite number, sorry. And now we do like var, I think in C sharp 5.0 you can write this. I can now write var f equals y arrow x plus x. Okay?
Okay.
So now you see that inside this thing, x appears.
Right.
But x is bound right there. So
in the box, x is an unbound variable, but in the closure, which extends the box to the environment, we were talking about looking up environment, it now becomes bound.
Exactly. And this is where like this dynamic scoping versus static scoping comes in, is that whether x gets bound, you know, closed over here, or when you call f, because maybe I now kind of pass f here, I have h that I pass f, and now h, which takes like a func from int to int. And now imagine that, let's call this f.
We can call it f, yeah.
Okay, now if I do var x equals 13, and now I do f of 10, the x can also be bound right here because it will...
That's a sensible thing to do, but it may be not what you want. Well, it's sensible. It won't cause the computer to catch on fire.
Some languages think it's sensible, but yeah.
It won't cause the computer to catch on fire.
Exactly.
You could write accurate math. You could write precise math to describe what's going on.
Exactly.
You could write a compiler that does.
Exactly. But that's the kind of difference. And now we know everything about scoping.
Now, the big deal in general term rewriting system is that an unbound variable is not an error. It's just itself.
Okay.
Because the compiler interpreter does know what to do with it. It leaves it alone.
So if in that case, just like if we would have F-sharp with C-sharp with that, or F-sharp, yeah, for that matter,
yeah,
you could write this. This would be fine.
And if you called F with 10, you would get back X plus X. Because the compiler says, I don't know what X is.
Yep.
Here, have it back. Maybe you know what it is. So that's what it does. So we're going to do some symbolic calculations on this nutrition fact label. This is one I just grabbed randomly off the internet. It is supposed to be a burger.
Okay. So I'm no fiber.
Yeah, no fiber. I'm going to read it from top down.
Yes.
Serving size, 4 ounces.
Yep.
Amount per serving is 160 calories, so they say. And 9 grams of fat. We're going to ignore the percents. Saturated fat, 4 grams. Cholesterol, 60 milligrams. Sodium, 70 milligrams. Protein, 21 grams. No carbs, no fiber, and some percents down there.
So Brian, but why is this ounce and then suddenly milligrams?
Actually, there are 5 units of measure in here. There's ounce, calorie, percent, gram, milligram, and I said there were 5. Where's the fifth one? We're going to end up having to distinguish fat grams from carbohydrate grams.
Okay.
You have to, because if you're going to calculate calories, you have no choice.
Yes.
All right, so we're going to check this for accuracy and do have some fun with this. So now, let me just set the stage for term rewriting in general.
Okay.
Term rewriting is all about evaluating expressions instead of running code. In some sense, they're exactly the same thing, but if the mindset when you want to write programs with this, is you're writing expressions and you're going to evaluate them by applying rewrite rules.
Yes, and to just go back to our C-sharp example here. In C-sharp, it's not so much, and let me put back my variable here because I cannot...
4711.
Okay. So the thing is, in C Sharp, it's not so much about evaluating expressions, but it's about executing statements. When I execute this statement, it kind of mutates this variable.
It does something.
And when I execute this statement, it makes this call. So it's a very different
mindset. What you imagine when you're writing your program is that it's setting values in memory.
Yes.
It's rewriting the memory core.
And
of
it's
the
actually
system.
Doing that.
That's exactly what
That's
it's doing.
That's why if you put your debugger here, true color here.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I put my debugger here, I can inspect that the memory of X is mutated.
And if you have your deeper debugger, you can even see where in physical memory it is.
Exactly.
Virtual memory and physical memory.
And I can see
memory.
My stacks, trace, everything.
Whole thing. Yes. So while you're writing your program, you imagine that you're manipulating the stack machine.
Yeah.
Over here, while you're writing your program, you're imagining that you are rewriting expressions.
Just like in algebra.
Just like this. Just like in algebra.
Okay. It's just that it's like something that does that rewriting for you. It applies the rules over and over again.
Mechanically. It's like a little algebra assistant.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is how people use Mathematica anyway.
Yep.
They use it to do their algebra homework.
Yep.
We're going to use it to tear apart a nutrition fact label. Value prop, why should you care about this kind of stuff? Well, you can, in addition to being able to do these kind of symbolic calculations, you get smaller, safer, more expressive, distributed, compatible, and reusable code. I can make all of these arguments here for you, but think of sending these expressions around the web. You can send it to your browser, you can send it to the cloud, you can send it to your phone, whatever. And so that makes the case for distributed.
Yep.
They're very small.
Yep.
These are just expressions. They're not big piles of code with DLLs and PDBs and other kinds of stuff. Okay. They support symbolic calculation, numeric, logical calculation. Implementing Prolog as a bunch of rewrite rules is a snap, really.
Yep.
Functional, function, since lambda calculus, we can write TR in lambda calculus, and lambda calculus is already a TR, so obviously you can do functional. Object models are ways to simulate that as well. So the deal is pattern matching. Think of, if you ever used an editor that has regular expressions, it's nicer than Notepad. Well, let me turn it around the other way. If you've ever used Notepad and you had to do a big replacement job and you're sitting there manually searching for strings that are almost like other strings, that's when regular expressions come. And
yeah, usually by the time I figured out kind of the regular expression syntax, I could have done it by hand. But yes, I see what you mean.
And the bigger,
I see what you mean.
It is, the worse it is. The bigger your job is. And, and then if you like Perl or awk, that's all you do all day long is write regular expressions.
Exactly. And you can parse HTML using regular expressions.
Absolutely.
If you're a Perl guy. Yeah.
You can write compilers in Perl.
Yes.
And so,
just jump quickly here.
Mm-hmm.
In some sense, C# has like very primitive pattern matching too. When I make this call, I'm kind of matching this F with this F. But
well,
there's
yes.
no kind of structure that I can destruct in a matching.
This H(f) is an expression.
Yes.
And the meaning to the compiler, the deeper meaning is, if ever you match this expression, please replace it with the generated code.
Yes, exactly.
So there's that extra little with the generated code.
Yes. Yeah. But the thing is that there's some really primitive traces of pattern matching even in C#.
No question about it.
Or in imperative languages.
And if you go to something like F#, there's
full-blown
pattern matching.
Exactly.
So, good. And by the way, in F# there is some symbolic calculation as well.
Yes.
So that can be all handled in the compiler,
Which is another trend, right? That all the languages get
They are converging.
Yes.
There's this kind of Nirvana spot somewhere in the middle, and Mathematica started way over here in the extreme left wing of term rewriting and is walking toward object programming and imperative programming. And then the imperative programming guys started over here with Fortran and Algol and COBOL and PL1, if you're old enough to remember that monster.
And
they're walking toward the function, and there's this sweet spot in the middle where all this stuff just works. Okay. So the slogan is, when you match this pattern, replace it with that expression after substituting actual values.
All right.
So where's the beef?
All right.
If we're going to write this burger nutrition facts in JavaScript, it would look very much like this. There's a bunch of properties. We've just encoded the information straight off that label.
Yep.
Imagine, if you will, that there's an OCR program. These are very popular now. You just point your phone at the NFL and poof, this thing blasts
you
out.
You go like this. This, by the way, looks like a very old phone. So
it does look like that, We just need the antenna that you pull out. The poor JavaScript programmer, though, has little choice but to capture A careful JavaScript programmer will do this.
And we all know how much we like to do comments, right?
So, oh, yeah, and keep them up to date and all that. Kind of.
Yeah.
Over here, in term rewriting, you have properties look like replacement rules. A serving size goes to 4 times ounce. The amount per serving goes to 160 calories. This is our times here. We've got a number times a symbolic constant.
Now he suddenly writes times.
Yeah.
And another thing here, right, because I think this is like a deep thing here. Here, the kind of the fact that this is 4 ounces is encoded in the value.
Yes.
Here it's a comment, but how can you, like, for example, there's no way, for example, to unit test this even, because there's no, this 4 is just 4. There's nothing that says that this is 4 ounces.
No, just it's in the programmer's head only.
Or if you want to do it, you have to put another kind of expression here. You would have to say curly open, you know, value,
oh,
comma,
yeah,
4, unit
you
could, equals
you
ounce.
You can do that.
And now it becomes... For both.
By the time you've done that, you've done most of the work
of
creating a term rewriter.
And that's what we're saying. It's like in every JavaScript program, there's really like
a little term rewriter in there. Once you start keeping track of units yourself, you're going to have to write some code to keep track of the units, and that code is going to be symbolic processing code. So let's write it once and for all. Okay, so we said a lot of this. Now let's see. Do the weights add up? Well, over here in JavaScript now, I write my little function that takes in some nutrition facts and adds up the total fat, dietary fiber, protein, cholesterol, sodium, carbohydrate. I now call my add weights function with the burger nutrition fact, and I get 160. I go over here in a term rewriter, and I have a symbolic expression that represents that sum. Doesn't evaluate to anything yet.
Yep.
But if I smack on this thing that says, remember, this is a collection of rules, and I say, please evaluate this expression by replacing each one of these guys with the rules, I get 30 grams plus 130 milligrams.
So I think this one is wrong because the label said 160. This one must be wrong.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, look,
well, let's go back
printed,
and look at the
it was
label
printed
here.
On the label, yes.
Yeah, there is a 160 there.
Yes.
Where did that come from? So now let's add up the calories and see if we get 160. It could just be a coincidence. But we know one thing for sure. You have to admit this. This sum made a mistake of adding grams to milligrams.
Yep.
And the symbolic guy refused to apply the distributive law, which we have coded in our term rewriter, refused to apply it to these two terms. You can't add a gram times a milli to a gram.
So I wouldn't say it refused it. This is just already a normal form. There's
this
no
is a
rule that applies.
It can't keep rewriting it.
Right?
This is actually a very good point. This is another big difference between the ordinary lambda calculus and term rewriting. In the ordinary lambda calculus, you apply the rewrite one time. So you were pointing out that I had written it syntactically.
Yes.
Over here in a compiler, applying the rewrite means emitting the generated code. And you just do that one time. And the execution of the thing, maybe there's a loop inside there. Maybe there's a recursion.
Yep.
That execution will handle these repetitions. Whereas in a generic term rewriter, what you normally do is you apply the rule, and then you apply it again. And then you apply it again. And then you apply it again until nothing changes. And that's called normal form, right?
Yes. I would say that you do that in the lambda calculus, same way you can apply battery reduction until you reach normal form.
All right, well, maybe the difference isn't that big.
The thing is that you might get stuck where there's no rule, and then in certain systems people say that's wrong. But what we're saying here is that, you know,
that's as far as it can go. And it's happy to give you back unbound variables as symbols.
Yep.
Okay, so how does it work? A lot of this we've already... Sean, this is live Mathematica code. I can just kind of put my thing in there. Mathematica says I'm going to execute the initialization, and in a second it'll say, I take 16 ounces per pound, I multiply it by 27 pounds, I get 432 ounces. Distributes over, there we go, popped up. If I take 2 ounces and add it to 4 ounces, I get 6 ounces. Great.
I need that in my kitchen.
This is why term rewriting is very nice.
Yeah. And we should not only have like an exercise show, but also like a cooking show.
That's right, cooking with gas.
Yeah.
Beckman-Turner Overdrive, Beckman-Meyer Overdrive, right, yeah. Applying objects to expressions, that's the way we want to use these term rewriting rules. It's a lot like calling functions, so we're going to show how that works. This is an expression. It evaluates to itself. It doesn't have any. Those are all symbolic constants.
Yep.
Let's save that expression in a variable. Still the same thing.
Yep.
And now we'll apply it in computations. An object is just a list of replacement rules.
Yep.
This is actually a familiar concept. Since we've already realized that a rewrite rule is just like a function,
yep,
then applying rewrite rules is like calling functions.
Yep.
And we're used to objects being collections of functions.
Yep.
This
methods.
Is a VTable.
Yeah. It's a VTable.
Yep.
Exactly. These are methods or properties, whatever you want to say.
Yep.
So there's actually turning one of these things into C sharp and back, or into JavaScript and back.
Yep.
It's a snap.
Yep.
There's a lot of commonality here. I made a little thing that makes it a little bit easier to look at. But there we are. That's our burger nutrition facts now, just stored in a nice little table.
Okay.
And we took, this is the variable where we stored the thing.
Yes.
And we apply the burger, we apply the object, which means...
Yep, it's like...
calling the functions on all those, yep, little terms in there, and we get this. Okay.
And the beauty of this, can you go back,
sure,
one slide? Because the beauty of this, that you can take that same symbolic value and apply different functions to it.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
So
if I had a chicken label,
yes,
or an ice cream label, I could apply. This thing is completely generic.
Exactly.
That's why I called it an NFL summary, a nutrition fact label summary. It summarizes,
yep,
the weight. This is just for the weight. We're going to get to the calories. That's more fun. So there's a long form. If you don't like this kind of slash dot thing, you can always call it like
well,
that.
Well, slash dot, that's a great website, so why not pay
I
tribute
like it.
To it?
I like it, yeah. So there we go. Now let's beef this up. We're now going,
okay,
to calculate the calories, because you noticed this funny 160. We did an erroneous calculation. We got a 160, and there's a glaring 160.
Yes.
So to actually check, we need to calculate the calories in the NFL.
Yes.
So we're going to have to do some more work. For that, I'm going to need to distinguish grams of saturated fat from I'm going to have to put in some more symbolic concepts.
Okay.
It's completely free to do this. You just make them up as you go along, which is lovely and liberating. So remember I was saying before that part of the value prop here is that this is expressive.
Yep.
You don't have to declare variables, and you know, and the other languages like F sharp and C sharp are moving in this direction as well. A little screen tearing there. Interesting. Let's see if I can scroll down. Good.
Okay.
So now we see that we've rewritten our label.
Yep.
To distinguish fat, gram saturated, the term rewriter reorders things,
okay,
which is fine. It doesn't hurt anything because
multiplication
is commutative.
Yeah. Yes.
And that helps it find out whether two things are equal. Because if you have x times y and y times x,
yes,
you really want those to be equal. So you have to let the term rewriter reorder
things. Is it using
things.
Lexical ordering for...
Yeah, now I'm just going to invoke some... I'm going to throw up some magic pixie dust and say, anyone who cares about this, look up Knuth Bendix.
Oh, oh, okay.
Old Don Knuth has been here.
Okay, I need a burger before, yeah, I can go there.
Or some acid.
Yes.
But, you know, everywhere you go in computing, it's kind of like Kilroy was here, except it's,
yes,
Knuth was here.
Yes. Yeah.
So sometime, yeah, in 1957, he figured this all,
yes,
out. And,
using go-tos.
All using go-tos, and it just, yeah, works. So now we have our cholesterol, and we can now track things pretty carefully. We're going to go mine the web for,
okay,
information. How many calories in a gram of fat? Look at that, right there. 1 gram of fat has 9 calories, and it's backed up.
Okay,
and
good. So we have 2, and you're a physicist.
That's fine. 2, 1, 2, that's a proof. That's a proof.
Proof, good.
So let's encode our calorie facts as rules. A gram of saturated fat, I want to rewrite that as nine calories.
Yes.
A gram of fat, also 9 calories. Saturated,
yep,
doesn't matter. Gram of sugar. I was just being careful by saying saturated. Maybe it's different.
Yes.
Maybe you want it to be different. Maybe you want a different set of rules.
Maybe you want to do this thing, yep.
Gram of sugar is 4 calories. Gram of carbohydrates is 4. Protein happens to be 4. It's a coincidence.
And also, like some people say, you know, there's different forms of carbohydrates, right? Slow and fast,
oh, yeah,
whatever. So you could make that distinction right here. In
That's right.
Label.
If you care about that, you can actually do this.
Yes.
So now, that's just a visualization of that block. Let's apply the calorie facts. So we now have our beefed up burger nutrition facts. That's with the fat and protein all,
yep,
all separated. Let's apply the calorie facts and look at what we get. 160 calories? Did we get 160 calories? No, no. That's carried over. We didn't rewrite that one. Remember?
Yep. That was...
That's input.
Yep. There.
Yeah, we didn't rewrite that one. Because the only ones we're rewriting are fat gram. We're going to now...
Yes, it's right there.
Yep. Yeah, so that's an input. So we haven't found a problem yet. We'll keep going. We've got 81 plus 36. How's your head math?
Let's let the computer do it. 117.
Mumble. Oh, we've got screen tearing again. 165. So they said 160, and I think you're right, Eric. That's probably a problem. They probably not only did, I mean, it's plausible. Let's not say probable. It's a plausible, honest programming mistake. You're in a hurry. You're trying to write up these. You've got thousands of these NFLs to do. You got your boss cracking the whip. You write some code. You get 160, and you say, oh, gosh, what was this 160? It's the amount per serving. But let's keep going. Is there anything else?
That's plus or minus 10%.
You're trying to appeal to the physicist again.
Yes. Yeah.
Highly suspect. Okay. Without units, I'm going to guess that this is an honest mistake.
Yep.
But it's too easy to make and compound. So remember I said the value prop is safer? It's a lot safer to do calculation with units. By the way, need to point out that F sharp can do this.
Yes.
It doesn't do general term rewriting, but it can do calculation with units.
Yes. And the thing is that you can see how dangerous it is, right? Because here, this is like an int. Doesn't say at all if this is miles or calories or grams or nothing. So now you have to keep all that unit calculations in your head.
Oh, it's terrible.
It's terrible.
And actually, it can cost billions of dollars. In 1999, NASA crashed the Mars Climate Observer, a $2 billion hole in the ground, literally, because the ground crew was sending instructions in pound forces and the software was programmed for newtons. This is off by a factor of around four or four and a half. But even in cooking, suppose there's an error in one of these nutrition fact labels and somebody has a diabetic incident or a cardiac incident. Who's liable?
Yep.
What's the amount of the liability? You know, if Mark Zuckerberg has a cardiac incident because of a bad nutrition fact label, this could be pretty bad.
Yes.
Could be a lot of money on the stake.
Yeah. I don't dare to eat anything anymore.
Nothing bad about Mark. He's just in the news these days. So NASA, after that terrible crash in 1999, they recommended research in units processing. And Fortress, Guy Steele, language programming language luminary, implemented units of measure, and Don Simon and Andrew Kennedy and F-sharp did it a different way, using the type system. And by the way, this is very interesting. Type systems, such as the one inside Haskell, they have term rewriters inside of them, very general ones. And they're doing lots of complicated symbolic calculations. A compiler is just a symbolic calculation machine. It's a bunch of term rewriting rules.
And by the way, there's also like a lot of people that not only do this for programming language, but also for spreadsheets. Because in spreadsheets, there's also lots and lots of unit errors. Like, because it's just columns of numbers.
Oh, yeah.
And how do you know that this is centimeters times,
Or in the money world, euros versus dollars, this is a big deal.
Yes. Yeah. And it's kind of amazing that these units have not propagated into the mainstream languages. Because if you do math or physics, everything has units. And that's how you kind of check, right? I need to kind of calculate a distance. Oh, let me just check the units. You don't have to even compute with the numbers.
It's brutally difficult. In my early life as a physicist, I worked on the JPL ephemeris, which had a model of the solar system with 800 variables, each one with different units in it. And when you're working in this code, you are constantly sweating. You are saying, oh my gosh, I'm looking at a formula, and the units for this formula are in some comment, or even worse, they're in some book in a library that's in Maryland.
And that was before hyperlinks.
Oh my gosh. Yep. And you look at this code and you say, you have no idea whether it's correct. And then you end up having to rewrite it in your head. And I don't know how many times I sweated over these things. Actually, when I started using Mathematica, way back then, was to actually check the code that we were writing in Fortran.
Makes sense.
I wrote the code again in Mathematica, checked the units, and then went in. So that's how I got involved in Symbolica. And since then, I've used Mathematica to design my C code.
I know that. I've seen that many, many times, yes.
And it's really kind of a nice thing to do.
Yes, so, by the way, how we did our teapot in HTML.
Absolutely,
absolutely. We have to write a paper about it.
That's right. That's another one coming up. Okay. It gets worse, though. Let's check that serving size. Remember, it reports 4 ounces of serving size. We can add up all the weights. Now, here we have a handy convert function. Remember, we were able to get everything in grams?
Yep.
Let's convert it to ounce.
All right.
1 ounce. So if I add up all the reported components in the nutrition fact label, I get 1 ounce. But the nutrition fact label says a serving size is 4 ounce. Now, 1 ounce is about 160 calories. I don't have to trust the label. We did the calculation.
Yes.
4 ounces then is going to be 600 some odd calories. Are you going to eat a burger that has 600 calories?
But
if you aimed your phone at an NFL and it said this burger is 600 calories, and oh, by the way, the mayonnaise, and the potato
fries, chips,
and the Coca-Cola.
But isn't like beef mostly water?
Don't know. If you cook a beef, I honestly don't know. If you cook a 4 ounce beef patty, does 3 ounces of it go away? Are you left with 1 ounce? Because if you cook it on an open flame, I would imagine most of the water is just going to boil off.
It's still juicy.
It's still juicy, but is that juice fat or is that water?
I don't know.
We don't know.
No, do we know?
We should ask Nathan Myhrvold.
Yes, or
I'm sure he's done the physics of a burger patty.
Maybe we should do a visit to his lab.
Get his cookbook and look it up.
Yeah.
But with just the information we have now, we can't say. All we can say is that it says 4 ounces, and I add it all up, and it's 1 ounce. There's 3 ounces of missing mass.
But dark matter.
But
your physicist, you must love this.
I do.
This happens all the time.
I have discovered the missing mass. I know
where it is.
I know what the dark matter is. It's burgers. So is this willful underreporting, or is it unreported and inert? We can't say. So that's...
Okay.
Okay, one more thing. And then the takeaways, we like computing expressions. It's a little shorter, clearer, expressive, sandboxable. We can do link on top of this. No problem at all.
Yep.
Because everything's a little monad. All those little collections, it's a monad of rules. An object is just monad. It can have monads of monads, and everything just works. We can do symbolic, and we can put evaluators everywhere. Okay, bonus round, and the computation is very short. I just summarized the entire computation here. The whole thing is just a few lines. And we can encode this in JSON, whatever we want to do, we can send it around. So bonus round, let's compute a label on the fly.
Okay.
Suppose you could take your phone and point it at a recipe.
Yep.
And the nutrition fact label would just pop up.
On your phone?
On your phone. It wouldn't have to go look it up. It's your own recipe. Maybe you hand wrote a recipe.
Yep. Or even
if you compute it on the fly.
Yes. Or if you just have, like, you know, you go to a restaurant and you have your plate there, you can take a picture of the plate and it does image recognition and...
That's a little more far-fetched, but it isn't off the mark.
Yeah.
But that's what we want to do.
Yeah.
So the geek note. Our plan for this...
Vector spaces.
Yeah, this is a vector space.
Oh,
okay.
Brian.
So now, I'm going to go back to the geek note.
You already kind of hurt my head with bound variables and free variables. Now you're talking about vector spaces.
A vector space is just a monad, so you know everything there is.
Okay.
So you're fine.
Okay, I'm fine.
Think of the recipe as being a bunch of coefficients.
Yep.
And these guys as being unit vectors in the various dimensions. So this is actually, this recipe here is a vector in a space of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 dimensions. And it has a length of 1 tablespoon in the olive oil dimension. It has a length of 16 ounces in the zucchini dimension, and so on. So all we have to do to create a fact label for our recipe is look up the grams and calories for olive oil, zucchini, salt, normalize them, and then multiply them by our amounts. That's our plan.
Good.
So it is a vector space sum.
So it's like finding calories using inner products.
So I'm going to jump to the answer.
Okay, good.
And then I'll walk through until we run out of patience, because it's a lot.
Yeah.
The answer is here's my mamma mia.
By the way, let me kind of interrupt you here because you're kind of vector space or whatever. This is for a board programmer like me. It's just a record, right? With fields of type integer and with some kind of
I'm multiplying symbols times strings times numbers.
Yes. And now you kind of left out the multiplication.
I did leave out the star. I'm getting lazy
you're
again.
Sloppy.
Sloppy and lazy. Physics. Right. It's not math. It's physics. Here's the answer, though.
Okay.
Let's look at the expression that generates this answer.
Now I feel good. I see fold.
Fold. We're happy.
Okay. So I have, now I'm happy again.
Imagine I have a function called sum NFLs. That's going to take two. Fold takes a binary function.
Yep.
I'm going to seed the fold with one NFL.
Yep.
Let's just take the first one of a list called scaled NFLs.
Yep.
And then the rest of the scaled NFLs.
So there's no fold zero in Mathematica?
There is a fold zero, but I don't know how to express the zero NFL.
Okay.
I don't need the zero NFL.
Okay.
I'll just seed it with the first one.
Okay.
But this is actually a really nice little pattern. If you have a list of things and you want to fold a binary function over them, do the first and the rest like that. The car and the cutter for you,
head
the old
tail.
Guys.
For a high school guy. Yeah.
And you do this and once and you realize this 1/6 here. This is a lot of pasta. Let's go back and look at mom's recipe.
Okay, but
16 ounces, that's a pound of zucchini.
Well, it's olden days, right?
This makes about 5 pounds of pasta. This is...
there's not a lot of spice in there.
No, there isn't, but...
like one onion, it's like now you take 1/6 of an onion, that's like...
I don't know. When I added up the weights, it turned out to be almost 5 pounds. So I just divided by 6. And now we have a very reasonable nutrition fact level. Imagine this rendered prettily as...
I don't think that dish will be very tasty, but...
Hey, it's mom's recipe. It's out of respect for mom. Yeah. Serving size, 360 grams, 309 calories. That's okay for an Italian dinner, you know, and so on. So let's see how we do term rewriting for this. Our plan is to convert recipe volumes and weights into standardized weight in grams. So we'll do that. I'm not going to read all this code, but I'm just going to note that there's nothing scary here. I take my recipe. I apply some volume rules.
Yep.
I apply some whole item rules because some of these things weren't one tablespoon of olive oil. Some of them were one onion.
Yes.
So that would be a whole item rule.
Yep.
And notice these rules, they don't hurt anything that they don't know how to rewrite.
Exactly,
they just
because
pass
they
it
just,
through.
Yep, no
they
errors,
leave it alone.
Just leave it alone.
There are never any errors. Well, there are some errors, but...
I don't never make errors when I code, so...
And we're going to map a nice little function. Yep. We're going to map a function that can convert any ingredient into grams.
Okay.
And sure enough, we get my recipe, mom's recipe, now in grams.
There's a lot of salt in there.
There's a lot of salt in there, yeah. Okay, now we're going to data mine... Basic NFLs are unit vectors.
Yep.
So I'm going to tack on the name in the front, and this is one tablespoon, and I just data mine.
Okay.
Just data mine.
You binged again for that?
I binged again for that.
Okay.
Now we normalize ingredient fact labels into per gram from per serving size.
Yep.
So that what I want is a 1 gram in this slot every single time. All I do is just divide through everything. So everything's linear here. That's what linear means. You can just divide through by the number.
Wow.
Well, the black pepper doesn't have any fat.
Really?
It does have some fat. It does have some fat calories. Yes. Has some sodium.
But where?
Little carbs. Little.
But there's
little fiber.
I always find this kind of strange, right? There's kind of there's calories from fat, but there's no fat.
You know what? All I did was mine the web and mindlessly applied the. So we are. If there are mistakes in these unit vectors, we are subject to them.
Okay.
We found that there are mistakes in these unit vectors. So we can actually turn the project of developing this thing into two projects. One is correcting the fact labels that are out there in the universe, and the other is using the fact labels to do things like recipes. It's two different applications.
Yeah.
Then we're going to multiply each normalized NFL by the recipe amount and add them all up. And a lot of these things are represented in volumes.
Yep.
So what we really need to get is a density quote. So we go out and mine, and look how I've done this. This is like a little database. Remember I mentioned Prolog before? Yep. If you were writing Prolog, this is exactly how you do it. You say the density of olive oil is, and you can have arbitrarily complicated things on the right-hand side.
So can I ask you something? Because yeah. why don't you kind of, you know, put like rules here? Like, you know, why didn't you do like olive oil density arrow kind of, you know?
It's a good question. It is certainly available to do that.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just showing an alternative way to represent the same kind of thing. Now we're going to compute grams per target volume from density. I don't want to walk through this. This is a lot of pattern matching. This is a fairly complex pattern matching thing. This says, if ever you see a target volume and a number followed by a weight, followed by divided by a volume, convert the weight into grams, convert the volume into the target volume, and multiply by the number.
But this is a beautiful example of like a powerful pattern matching, where you're pattern matching on this kind of, you know, complicated multiplication and division.
Yes.
Yes.
So this says, if you see an expression of this form, replace it.
Yes.
Yeah. So it looks like a function definition. It's very much like a function definition, but you get the pattern in the left.
And of course, if you use Haskell or F sharp or Clojure or whatever languages with pattern matching, you will recognize this kind of.
That's right. This isn't scary once you get used to it. The only thing scary here is that these underscores and question marks. But it's not. There's nothing scary. There's no scary concepts here. It's just scary syntax. The next one is we're going to make a weight rule from a quantified ingredient volume. A quantified ingredient volume is something like 4 teaspoons.
Yep.
This is a rule that creates new rules. Why not?
Higher order rules.
Yeah, why not? So now this weight rule says if you ever see a quantity, which happens to be a number, times an ingredient, times one of these volumes, just one of these are the only ones I'm handling. Oops, I got screen tearing again. Sorry about that. Please replace it with the ingredient, with a rule. That's why I've made this green here.
Yep.
A new rule that takes the ingredient times the volume to the ingredients times this thing that we just did a second ago times this density quote.
Yep.
So I could have done a rule application in there instead of a lookup.
Yes.
Yeah, it's 6 1/2 dozen of the other. And oh, by the way, here's another rule. This is like an overload.
Yep.
This one says, please apply this replacement if ever you see this pattern. Mm-hmm. This says, please apply this replacement if ever you see that pattern. Why do I want to replace it with the empty list? Because I'm going to use select many. I'm going to use bind.
Oh,
and bind, this is all a monadic calculation.
And this one is implicitly kind of one.
This is implicitly one, and this one is going to be an empty.
Okay.
So I can get rid of things that don't match the pattern.
Exactly. And this one is like also a little bit weird, right? Because there's like, you know, this is like
it's more scary syntax, yes, but it's not as scary. Yes. This is dot star. If you're using regular expression in an editor, this is dot star. Okay, so now we have select many. I wrote it. I didn't show it here, but it's really easy to write it. And I'm going to put link in this little term rewriting system. Take my recipe, wave around, you select many, and then now I get. Notice it's reduced the size. This has done a filter and a compress and a filter and a normalization. Everything's in grams on the right hand side.
Yep.
Everything's happy. I do the same thing for whole item ingredients, including the monadic catch all and the whole item rules. Oops, more screen tearing. Mm-mm-mm.
Cooking with monads.
Cooking with monads. A third of a pound for an onion, and this one's in pounds. We're going to do another pass to turn them into grams. And everything is weights now. We have some grams, some ounces, and some.
Yes, now we have to normalize those.
So we normalize those, and now we have everything in grams. And now here we just convert, and you'll forgive this kind of messy thing, but apply plus to some.
Okay.
Mumble, and we get almost 5 pounds. That's a lot of pasta.
So now, it's at least 6, that, you know, in those days, you know, that was.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now it gets, this is just a constructor for a nutrition facts label.
Yep.
So if we're a rendering system in a UI, a rendering system.
That makes that pretty.
Make it pretty. And we go get olive oil and zucchini and bell peppers, stewed tomatoes. I'm data mining now.
Yep, yep.
And we want to look at all this. Now we've got to canonicalize the units.
Okay.
I'm not going to go through all this. This is another rule that rewrites rules. It says, if you match a rule that looks like this with a green arrow in there, please replace it with a rule that looks like this, another green arrow.
Okay.
So what that's going to do is just canonicalize the units from these particular volumes to my gram per target volume from the unit density. And now I'm...
But that's super powerful metaprogramming.
This is super powerful. And look how small it is compared to what you would have to do. That's the cool thing.
Yes.
That's the cool thing.
Everything is just has the same representation. That's the kind of thing that you're really kind of using here.
Right. Whoops. Screen tearing. Okay. So I have a list of my unit vectors. I canonicalize the NFLs. This is just map, more scary syntax for something we already know. The norms. This is a lambda expression with an anonymous variable. Sorry, scary syntax, but we already know all this stuff.
Yep.
I could write this out in more verbose form, but why?
Well, that's fine.
I get my normalization factors. I have a function for scaling. And the only complication in this function for scaling is I need to skip the lines that have a name in it.
Because that's
all I have to do.
Yep.
So in other words, if the first item in the line is name, replicate the line. Otherwise, write a rule that says the property name rewrites to... So I'm writing another rule here.
Yep.
And multiplied by the scalar. And now some NFLs... Map thread is just zip.
Yep.
So in fact, I should have... If I wrote why didn't I write zip?
But is there select many like naturally in Mathematica, or did you have to write it?
I wrote it, but it's trivial.
Yeah, sure, but this one is there. So I think it's good style to just keep the things how they're
only coded. Add what I need to
exactly.
add. In fact, select many is literally a composition, because there's a composition operator, composition of map with flatten one.
Yep.
You can't flatten two or three, you have to flatten exact
one.
Once.
Yes.
And this one also, this one skips dimensions that don't match and adds them up. So this is point-wise. There we're done. That's cooking with monads via term rewriting.
Perfect.
Is that cool?
Look at that. And we know for sure that this is now correct.
And my stomach is growling. Well, it's correct modulo the input NFLs, which we know have problems in them.
Yes. Okay. Beautiful. Well,
all right, another episode of Beckman-Meyer Overdrive. Right. Till next time.
Okay, bye-bye.
Cheerio.